Hello again, GWA. This is Princess April, and this is the second half. Well, I expect this is actually going to be longer, but we'll see. This is the second part of my AMA. And again, I want to thank all the people who asked me questions and all the insightful questions that they asked. It really has been a lot of fun so far, and it's really interesting to see what people are interested in. And I really appreciate it. So without further ado, let's get into the not safe for work questions. So if you're at work and people are listening, you probably want to, you know, be careful about that and stop broadcasting it out, because this could get pretty raunchy. Anyway, let's start with Dr. Feelgood and Orgasms questions, his not safer, or her or his not safer work questions. What's the dumbest, funniest sexual encounter you've ever had? Okay. Well, I haven't had very many dumb, funny sexual encounters. All of my sexual encounters have been with my current spouse. So I've never had any sex aside from with her. And we've had some funny times, but it's been a long time. And I don't really... remember or feel like talking about them. So there's that. What physical aspect of the male, if possible female as well, body turns you on the most? Okay, so first thing, I am attracted to women. Beautiful, mysterious, amazing, magical women. That's who I am. So I like men. And in fact, to jump ahead a little bit, this sort of touches on some of the transgender stuff that's going on and my experiences and my viewpoints and blah, 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 blah. But, the short of it is that I am extremely attracted to women. That is the way it is. I'm not really sexually attracted to men. However, I am really attracted to straight sex. So that's where it gets a little weird. And as a transgender person, as a transgender female, I'm still attracted to women, but I'm still attracted to straight sex. And that sort of informs everything I do on GWA. It makes me an odd one out, for sure, because I think it does. And it sort of informs the way I write, why I perform what I perform, and I don't know. I love performing as female because that's how I feel and that's how it makes sense to me. And I don't like performing as male because I don't really understand it. I don't understand how to perform as a male in a way that's sexy. Doesn't make sense to me. So that's partly why I like make those choices and perform things, the things that I do. And as far as writing goes, I'm much more interested in writing females than I am males. So I like to perform females, and I like to hear and have content, you know, centered around females. So even if I'm listening to an audio, and I listen to F for M audios because I want to put myself in the shoes of the performer. So of the female performer, that's where I feel like, oh, I want to get a sense of what it is to be her, you know. I don't necessarily want to get a sense of what it is to be the listener on the other hand end of a male audio, an M for F audio. That just doesn't do anything for me. Maybe I think it's because I'm not attracted to males. So, but at the same time, I'm attracted to straight sex. I'm attracted to cocks and cocks inserted into pussies and blowjobs and all that stuff. But again, I'm going to revisit this when we get into the ContraPoints stuff, but it's complicated and it's really hard to explain and it's really vulnerable to admit. And to really sort of express to people outside of that experience. But that's the bottom line of it. So this question, which I'll get back to here, what physical aspect of the male, if possible female as well, body turns you on the most? male bodies, I suppose, not much. You know, maybe they're cocks because of how they participate in sex. Maybe. But the female body, in terms of what turns me on the most, gosh, I mean, make me a list, you know. Eyes, smile, face, legs, you know. That's a good start. I don't even know. And I like to say there's like three forms of magic left in the world for me. One of them is music, because I can't explain what music does to me or why it does it. I mean, there's probably perfectly logical scientific explanations for why, tonal music and going home to the dominant chord in a major chord is satisfying. I get that. But at the same time, the subtleties of why different types of music do that differently and how it works and what it does to me, it's magic to me. It will always be magic. The second form is women. My attraction to women. It's magic. I don't want to know why I'm attracted to the crook of a woman's leg, or why I love a girl's smile so much, or why I'm so fascinated with sort of the software around a woman's eyes, right? Her eyelids and her lashes and all that stuff. I don't know why. I don't want to know why. All I know is that it's magic, you know? So thank you, women out there, for just being you, because my God, amazing. It's amazing to me. It gives me chills. It gives me butterflies. It does all those things for me. And it's sort of one of the great reasons to be alive, you know, their voices, their faces, their hair. Whatever. And the third form of magic out there that I will never understand, that I feel like is just juju amazing, is the cloud. I know it sounds crazy, right? But I'm talking about the cloud. I'm talking about OneDrive. I'm talking about Dropbox. I'm talking about all those things. Dropbox, the cloud. It's insane. It's magic juju to me. And I don't know how I got along without it, to tell you the truth. Anyway, I don't know. There it is. What time during the day are you the horniest? I am the horniest in the morning, thank you very much. And that is, in fact, when most of my GWA writing happens. First thing in the morning, after I get up and feed my kitties, I step into my office and I write for at least an hour about, you know, horribly, you know, dark and sexual and perverted things. You're welcome, everybody. I'm going to skip a couple of these because I just don't want to answer them, but I'll go to this one. Which fictional character do you want to have sex with the most and why? Which fictional character do I want to have the sex with the most? All right. My answer is Captain Marvel. Know why? Because she's... especially in the movie, you know, Brie Larson, I love her, but I'm talking about the fictional character, Captain Marvel. And in the movie, she's petite, she's blonde, and she's powerful. She's joyful in her power, confident, she's humor, you know, she's funny, and she's brave. Really brave. And the thing about, like, this is kind of the difference, right, between Captain America and Captain Marvel. Captain America gets up because it's the right thing to do after he's been knocked down. Captain Marvel gets up because fuck you. That turns me on. I can't tell you why. It just does. And the fictional character Captain Marvel, I'm really very, very attracted to her. So if I could have sex with a fictional character, if I could step into Kelly Sue DeConnick's comic series about Captain Marvel several years ago, when Captain Marvel was living in New York and in an apartment building, and she had a neighbor who wanted to kick her out because it was Captain Marvel and he just didn't like her. If I could live in that apartment building with her and interact with her that way and like maybe get a chance with her just because she's so confident and beautiful and powerful, you know, I think it would be neat to be in that, the presence of that, and to talk with her. I don't know. There you go. What are your dick size preferences? I don't really have a dick size preference. In fact, when I write, I do write sometimes that it has, you know, that somebody has a big dick, but I more often write that they have a hard dick. So it doesn't matter how big it is or what size it is or what shape it is. It matters more if it's hard or not. So again, transgender woman attracted to straight sex. Besides GWA, what are your top three erotic subreddits to visit? I'll tell you the truth. Aside from the GWA and related subreddits, which is GWA and Gone Wild Audible and Gone Wild Audio Backstage and the Dark Side Playground, besides those, which I do visit on a regular basis, I also like Hidori Rose. She's a cosplay artist, and she's a not-safe-for-work cosplay artist. And I like her subreddit because she's extremely beautiful. And she posts some pictures up there. And one day I'll gather her some money and I'll subscribe to her Patreon, but I haven't been able to do that yet. But so I pay attention to what she's doing because she's so beautiful. Let's see. How did you stumble upon GWA? Okay. So I've been making Not Safe for Work audios for years and years. I don't know, 4 years, you know, before I found GWA. I just did it. And I'll answer more about that later, but I made them for myself, you know. And at some point I was like, man, I would really like to find a place to share these because I think maybe there may be one or two people out there who might actually like them, maybe, or like see things the way I do enough to like, you know, appreciate them and, you know, connect with them or something like that. So I was looking for some place to put them. I eventually put a couple of them up on Literotica, but I hate what Literotica does to them because they're so compressed and they sort of take all, they squeeze all the life out of them and it make them sound terrible. So I decided not to do that anymore. And then my spouse was encouraging me to find some other place. She's like, there must be some other place you can go. So when I really started looking in earnest, that's when I found GWA. And I was like, oh my Lord, look at all this. And so I spent, you know, 2 months just like what you do, like all GWA newbies do is just spend months going through the backlog of audios on GWA and finding what you like and finding what you don't, discovering stuff that's new that you never knew before and all this other stuff. And so it was really eye-opening to me. And so I found it that way, at my spouse's encouragement. And then I started sharing my stuff there too. And eventually I started writing scripts, which we'll get into later. What type of erotic audios will you absolutely not listen to or record yourself? Okay. Well, I thought I had an answer to this like a couple months ago, but then I ended up just breaking right through the false ceiling of what I thought my hard limits were by writing and recording something that I thought I would never write or record. I haven't shared it publicly and won't probably share it publicly. It was made specifically for a specific person as a thank you for what they did for me. But it really blew past some of my hard limits. But given that, what I won't listen to, if I see it in the tags, I tend to shy away from it, is Friends to Lovers. There's reasons why I don't like Friends to Lovers, and it's based on my past and personal stuff, and I just, it triggers me. So it makes me really upset and not in a good way. Probably in a way that a lot of my audios make other people feel. And if I do make people feel that way, I really am sorry. And I hope that you realize, you know, now what to avoid. But Friends to Lovers does that to me. You know, it's so weird what some people are turned on by and really want to hear and what some people just can't stand to hear. And it's not what you think a lot of times, you know. Some people can handle the hardest, most violent rape, and some people, and those same people can't handle an L-bomb, you know. While some people can take all the L-bombs and, you know, loving reassurance that you can muster, but they can't stand any idea that somebody might get hurt. You know, I get that. I totally get it. But it's so fascinating in a firsthand experience to realize that the limits that you have are not limits that other people have. And more importantly, the stuff that doesn't even, you know, click on your radar as being a possible limit for anybody is actually can be really a hard limit for some people. So it's impossible to know, you know, and that's eye-opening when you start really sort of getting into GWA and the community and to realize the countless number of different kinds of people go there and what they're there for and what kind of content they create and what kind of audios that they consume. It's just fascinating. So I don't like Friends to Lovers. I don't tend to like vanilla and pillow talk stuff. Partly, I think, because I have that in my real life. And a lot of it really triggers me in terms of my past and interactions I've had with women in my past. You know, I don't have hard feelings. It's just, I've got some painful stuff back there. And so a lot of times the Friends to Lovers / Pillow Talk audios will trigger that. And that really is a bummer. So I kind of avoid that stuff. I also will avoid any kind of like major blood and violence. I don't like that stuff either. I mean, of course I will. I like rape and I like, I even like some other stuff that goes pretty extreme that I'm like too embarrassed to admit, but violence and gore and that kind of stuff, I generally won't record and won't listen to. If it's in the tags, I just won't. But that's, again, no judgment. If you were a stripper, what would your stripper name be and what would be your gimmick / character? Gosh, I don't know. Maybe like Bratty April, you know? And I'd be petite and I'd be cute and I'd be a complete brat on stage. I'd be a total tease. You know, I'd be flirty and smiley and I would draw you in by being cute and then I'd just be mean. Probably wouldn't make much money, but that's probably what I would be if I were a stripper. You asked, so that's what you get. When was the last time you called someone a cunt and why? I have outside of my audios. Outside of the fantasy that I present in my audios, I have never called anyone a cunt, and I never would. Never. In my audios, a different story. But that's fantasy, and that's different. So, there you go. Okay, moving on to book chapters. And book chapters have some Really interesting questions. So here we go. In your capacity as a writer, do you feel like you're drawing on the same creative vein when writing as you're doing music? To me, again, you know, we're going to kind of cover this, but music and writing to me follow a similar path. More than that, even though, music, writing, and sexuality follow a similar path. So to me, it's all similar. I relate to it in that way. Music, the music that I love tells a story and ends in a climax. The writing that I love tells a story and ends in a climax. The sexuality, sexual stories that I love, they tell a story, they end in a climax. So all three of those things are very similar to me. They all seem to go hand in hand to me. And I enjoy mixing and conflating the three together. And again, we're going to get into more of that in a subsequent question. But yeah, you know, I do feel a little bit like I'm drawing in the same creative vein when writing erotica as when I'm writing music. It's all kind of the same. In fact, music is sort of inseparable from sexuality to me. But then again, so are humans. Relationships are kind of inseparable from sexuality to me. Like, it's not overt. It's not like I'm like turned on when I talk to a friend. It's just that I relate to them as a human being. And part of the human experience is relating to people on multiple levels. I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah, that's a little peek into the psyche of Princess April is I find intimacy sexy. I find humans sexy. I find vulnerability sexy. I find music sexy. So yeah, it's all part of the same sort of stuff to me. I don't know. It probably doesn't make any sense, but there it is. Okay. So we were talking about ContraPoints, the last audio. ContraPoints is a YouTube channel put on by Natalie Wynn. She is ContraPoints. She's a transgender female, and she's incredibly smart. She's, you know, a PhD candidate and extremely well-educated. She used to be a teacher, and now she's a YouTube influencer. Every video she has gets about, you know, 1.5 million views, and I'm not exaggerating there. And about 16,000 plus comments, and I don't know how she keeps track of it all, but what she does is pretty amazing. And it's the whole package, and I find it, you know, I relate to it. And what she says is a lot of what I think. So yes, as I said in my Safe for Work audio ContraPoints, I do stan it. I stan Natalie because I really respect what she is, what she has to say, and her viewpoints, and how she handles herself. And I respect the difficult position that she's in terms of a transgender woman YouTube influencer, right? So here's a question from Book Chapters. The question just occurred to me, and insofar as it pertains to your experience as a sexual subject and a trans woman, you should in no way feel obligated to respond to it. Well, thank you, but I'm going to respond anyway. You know your limits best, and I only mean the best. Anyway, speaking of ContraPoints, at time of writing, Natalie Wynn has just come out publicly as a lesbian. In said coming out, she elaborated that in the time she thought she was hetero, she could almost only gain sexual gratification through extremely submissive, stereotypical gender performativity, namely a hard daddy kink. She said she thought this was an unhealthy way for her to reassure her feminine gender identity as a trans woman to her surroundings and to herself. I noticed I noticed that marked power gen. I noticed that marked power dynamics across the gender binary abound in your excellent overer, too. Have you ever recognized some of the same feelings Wynne has described around her retroactively evaluated heterosexuality in your sexual experience? Or is the princess also the daddy sometimes? This is a really loaded and complicated question, and I really sort of appreciate the insight there. Because my work on GWA as a scriptwriter and as an audio producer, as a creator, is heavily based in my sexuality, obviously. And my sexuality is complicated. And the first thing to, and what Natalie Wynne at ContraPoint sort of makes a point of saying is that these two things work at the same time. Gender is not sexuality. That's an important thing for most people outside of that sphere to realize. Like, say, okay, so I'm a cishet white guy. Understanding that my gender and my sexuality are two completely separate things is an important thing for you to understand. Because a lot of times they get conflated automatically by people. It's like, okay, well, if she's transgender, that means she is, you know, attracted to men and she wants to, you know, experience sex as a woman with a man, right? That's not necessarily true. And that's not really the case for a lot of people. And but at the same time, ContraPoints also, and Natalie also sort of says, like, the sexuality and gender are in some ways connected. But it's important to understand that they're separate before you start connecting them back together again. And so in my case, and I don't know if I have a good point, because, you know, ContraPoints is amazing in that she's got a point of view and she expresses it so well. But my point is that my sexuality and my gender are, they're connected, but they're not as connected as you might think. I am attracted to women, and yet I'm attracted to straight sex. I don't identify as a man, I identify as a woman. My fetishistic tendencies that come out in GWA, which is a lot to do with petite, strong, confident, vulnerable women, right? Both submissive and dominant. That comes out. And I like, you know, I like power imbalance. I like humiliation. I like degradation. I like to explore those things. I like to explore those aspects. Those things turn me on. Where I fit in that is a different, like, sort of dynamic altogether, and it really gets confusing in terms of personally, right? Those are my fantasies, and where I fit personally in terms of my gender and all that is much more complicated. But there's a difference between my fetishistic sexual fantasies and my gender. Completely different. And although somehow connected, right? Underneath the surface, they are connected. And I won't deny that. ContraPoints explains this so much better and so explores this so much better. She doesn't really explain it. She explores it a lot better than I do in various videos that she makes. But I'm not transgender because I want to experience sex as a woman. Even though I do, and I wish I could. I'm not transgender because I have certain sexual fantasies that I cannot explore any other way. Even though I have those fantasies, and I explore them through GWA. That's not why I'm transgender. I'm transgender because in every other aspect of life, has nothing to do with my sexual fantasies or my GWA life or anything like that. In every other aspect, I feel more connected as a female than I do as a male. I just relate in a different way. My writing is a certain way, and my interests are a certain thing, and it feels right that I'm female. It feels right that I express myself as female. And it has nothing to do with my sexual preferences, fantasies, interests. It does have something to do with it, but the reason I'm transgender has very little to do with it. And I can't explain it any more than that. So when you're asking about power dynamics across the gender binary, like, you know, the way I write and the way I look for ambiguity and vulnerability and power exchange, power imbalance, right? Man, I don't know. I put females as dominance. I cast females as subordinates. I cast male as both as well. And I find fascination in both dynamics. But ultimately, I'm interested in what the female is feeling and what they're thinking in that half of, I'm only really ever interested and connect with what the female is feeling and doing in each of those scenarios. And her interaction with the man is as a unknown. She doesn't connect with him. She doesn't understand him. She's doing her own thing. You know, she's being her. And so I don't know. I know I'm just making no sense at all, but it's a fascinating thing. And when you start, like, ContraPoints and Natalie Wynn really goes into much more detail and very well articulated thoughts about how this works and how she thinks it might work and you know, how complicated it really is. It's one of those things that I tend not to think too much about, but it also is something that I have to think a lot about because my interaction and relationship with GWA is different than most people. Most people are going to come in and say, hey, I'm a male, identify as a male, and I want to hear a female talking to me. You know, me, I'm a female, I identify as a female, but I have a male voice. I have male parts. I'm not ashamed of my male parts or my male voice. I have them. I'm not going to change that. I'm too old to change it. But my interaction with GWA is not like others is. And others make assumptions about what my interaction with GWA is. And they're probably wrong, you know. It's a source of frustration, and sometimes it's a source of pain. But I sort of struggle through it anyway because if I can find the people who can accept me for who I am on GWA, which I think the people who've asked these questions do, I've got a win there. I've got validation. I've got ways to express myself about who I am and how I feel and what my sexuality is without worrying about too much about, like, all this other crap that you have to worry about when you're in real life, you know? I don't know. I don't know if that really answers any questions at all, but yes, the princess is the daddy sometimes. That's the short answer. The princess is also the downtrodden, you know, bitch sometimes. The slut sometimes. I like being both. Anyway, there it is. I don't know. Sorry, pet peeve of mine. We're still back on book chapters here. What's the story of the worst thing that ever happened to your genitals outside the bedroom? Okay, worst thing that ever happened to my genitals. I have male genitals. Big surprise. I still have them. We'll probably always have them. Worst thing that happened was I was in grade school and a girl that I knew in my class, she kicked me in the balls one day on the playground. I don't think she realized exactly what she did, but it was the most painful experience that has ever befallen my genitals. Probably not the most painful experience of my life, but it came really, really close, because I do remember it, and that was in grade school, and that was so many years ago, I care not to elaborate on it, but kicked me in the balls. I don't think she realized what she was doing. So I don't feel any ill will toward her, but wow, she did a number. That really hurt. Do you feel like your sexuality is unsatisfactorily represented by whatever set of kinks, turn-ons, and preferences you happen to be having at a given time, seeing how these things naturally change over time? Or is there something you find you always return to, things where you feel, this is it, this is home, this is me? Well, I always return to power imbalance. I always return to humiliation and degradation. I just love it. I 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 like, you know, body betrayal. I like that the woman or the person who is being humiliated or degraded hates it, but also loves it. Like they can't stand it. Like they're completely mortified by it. But at the same time, their body betrays them. That is home. If there's any home for me in terms of my sexual expression, especially in a fantasy context, that's it. That's it. Otherwise, refer to my previous answer when it comes to is my sexuality satisfactorily represented by whatever set of kinks, turn-ons, and preferences you happen to be having at a given time. That my sexuality is not satisfactorily represented on GWA. But it's the closest thing I have. It's the closest I've ever gotten. So in that way, I'm super, super grateful for it. And I think there's at least a few other people out there who really do understand. And I can't tell you what that means. So, yeah, there it is. Moving on to Night Owl 91's questions. First question is, why petite girls? I don't know. I don't know. As I said before, women are magic. Women's bodies are magic. I like petite women. I like petite women who are super confident. I like brats. I like young women who are beyond their years in terms of sexual knowledge, right? I also like vulnerable women, women who really don't understand what's going on and yet are brave enough to sort of face it anyway. That's what I find so fascinating about vulnerability and putting and casting a woman in a submissive role, is that you see the vulnerability and you see her bravery in dealing with what she's dealing with. You know, it's pretty amazing. And I love it. I love to see that. I love to write it. I love to feel it with her as I'm writing it, you know. Why petite girls? I don't know. I think that's why. I like women who are young and yet somehow instinctively sexual anyway. I don't tend to like older women or large women who, you know, who dominate physically or in terms of like experience over the guy. I like young brats who do it. I don't know why. Next question. Sub, dom, switch, neither, or both, but lean more to one. I think I'm mostly sub. Yeah. That said, I like to write dom, because I like to explore the sub part of it. And I guess I'm switch, probably. You know, as much as I kind of like, don't like to admit that, I don't know why, I just don't, but I just am, I think. I enjoy, if I'm dom, I enjoy being mean dumb. Psychologically mean, that is. And if I'm sub, I have a hard time giving up that control in real life. So I like to do it in my sexual life. You know? I don't know. There's that. Is there a non-porn movie that has the nuance, ambiguity, sex, vulnerability, and darker themes you enjoy? Yes, there is, Night Owl 91. And if I were to choose one of those, it would be Mulholland Drive. It's a David Lynch movie put out in the 1990s, I think. And if you want to see the ambiguity, the sexiness, the vulnerability, and darker themes in a safer work kind of, pretty much safer work format, go watch Mulholland Drive. And then if you don't get it, go read about it so that you do. Because it is a remarkable movie in terms of ambiguity and having a reason for everything. And the main character played by Naomi Watts, she just does a remarkable job. And it's dark, it's sexy, it's beautiful, it's art. So, Mulholland Drive. That's my answer to that question. I could answer others, but that's the one that comes directly to mind. Do you have any aims with your erotic works beyond sharing kinks and finding like-minded people, or is it all just for funsies and connecting? I think that's what I'm there for, pretty much. So, I promised myself when I joined GWA that I was there to turn myself on, right? To turn other people on, to make other people come, to make myself come, right? It seems like a really superficial goal, but that's what I'm there for. And the reason I say that is because that's what I hope others will do as well, is that I write things to turn myself on and make myself come. I hope other people do the same, meaning to write things that turn them on and to make them come, right? And as a side benefit is I get to meet people who are open-minded and non-kink-shamey and just trying to get through life like the rest of us are, and they're awesome. Like, I've had great correspondence with various different kinds of people, both writers and performers, aspiring writers, who either like my stuff or are interested in talking to me about things, and maybe that I am interested in talking to them about things, or maybe I'm hoping against hope that certain performers might consider doing stuff that I've written. And it's all been great, right? But I'm there for that exploration of my sexuality and our collective kind of sexuality. And if I stop doing that, like if I need to pursue something that isn't that, I'll probably go somewhere else to do it, you know? So that's what I'm there for. That's what GWA Day is to me, is to find like-minded people and to share my sexuality with them. Self-love time. What is something you really like about yourself? Go ahead and toot your own horn. This probably belonged more in the safer work category because I think the answer is what I really like about myself and what I think I'm best at is making friends in real life. I'm embarrassed at how many great friends I have. I just do. A lot of people don't have the luck that I do with people. And I can't tell you what it means to have a tribe of people around me in real life that know who I am, accept who I am. There's a few people who know everything, including my GWA shenanigans. And they love me, and they'll always be there for me. And I have people that I grew up with since the first grade that I hang out with on a regular basis, and I'm never going to lose those people. So I love the fact that I can make friends like that, and that I can do it again and again and again, because I have. That's my favorite thing about myself. So moving on to Captain Jericho's late questions to my AMA. They ended up asking questions after the deadline, and I thought I'd just sneakily incorporate them here. And don't worry, Mr. Brumbly, your answers are coming after. First question from Captain Jericho. Do you people ask you inappropriate questions? Yes, they do. Most of the time, not, because I'm pretty open about my who I am and what I think and my life and all that stuff. Probably inappropriately so in a, on occasion. But the inappropriate comes when people have agendas and they start asking me about trans experiences and questions and stuff. And I don't mind questions about it, but I do mind when I can tell that you have an agenda that you want to further by asking the questions. And that not only hurts me, it also makes me mad, and I just tend to ignore questions like that. And I don't really want to go into examples because, it's just not fun. So yes, people do, and people react to my posts both publicly and privately with some pretty intolerant stuff, and that's just the way it is. It's part of me putting myself out there. And it sucks. I wish people wouldn't, but what are you going to do? So is there anything that you want people to know? Okay, well, yes. Because I tend to write darker psychological stuff a lot of times, I really do want people to know that I'm not a dark person. I am. I have my dark side, right? And I enjoy my dark side. I love my dark side. I do. I love other people's dark sides. I like to see that the way people create in that space, right? But in real life, I am a very gentle, very empathetic, very kind person. And I mean it, you know? And my exploration of darkness in sexuality and fantasy is really just a sort of working out of some of my youthful issues a little bit. And I think, maybe, I don't really know, but more simply, it's just an exploration of my fantasies and what really turns me on in a way that I can't explore these things in real life, but I can explore them in fantasy. So I enjoy doing that. And I enjoy sort of exploring what I love about it. But what I would want people to know is that that's not me in real life. It's just not. And whether you believe me or not, I guess, is immaterial, but I do want to say it. And because I want you to know that they're just fantasy. And I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. You know, it's important to me. Because I like to explore it, but I also like to put it down, you know, when I'm done with it. So that's what I'd want people to know. Do you think trans acceptance and normalization has improved or declined or neither in the last 2 or 3 years? Well, I've been out for about 3 years. And I think that I think awareness has improved. Now, when I was a kid, I knew a trans person, so it's not like it's old thinking. This isn't anything new. This has been going on for a long time, and people just haven't really sort of been aware of it. As far as acceptance and normalization, I think it's improved in the last couple of years, probably as a reaction, maybe, to certain political climates, you know. But at the same time, there's still quite a ways to go. And both in terms of the cis population and the people who aren't trans, but also in terms of the people who are trans accepting who they are and accepting themselves. And so that's a big one. It's a big one for me. It's a big one for a lot of people. So acceptance and normalization, we're getting there, but there's still quite a ways to go. I think it's improved a little. Okay, moving on to Mr. Brumbly's not safe for work questions. What inspired you to create your erotic narratives with original music? Well, as I sort of said before, music and sexuality are sort of hand in hand to me. And I think one of the early influencers way back in the day was a set of movies called Night Trips and Night Trips 2, and they were done by Andrew Blake, where the sex on screen is carefully choreographed with the music that you hear. Andrew Blake ended up moving away from hardcore sex later, and he stuck with the music, but the music changed into a less, what do you say, like poppy, less, there's a way to describe it, but he changed the music style, and he's drifted away from hardcore sex. But in those times, way back in the day, when he was doing Night Trips 2, that was a heavy influence on what I do for my Good Girl series, my Just Like an Animal series, and my Easy series. Carefully choreographed music with a sexual story, you know. And when those particular audios, they take forever to produce. I mean, it's original music. It's carefully timed. It's, you know, meticulously written. And I pull out all the stops to make sure that it's a crafted product from the beginning to end. And they're usually longer. They're usually 40 minutes to an hour long. So I'd say that what inspired me is the fact that I conflate music with sex so easily, and that I saw Night Trips and Night Trips 2 by Andrew Blake many, many years ago. So there it is. Do you like listening to music during sex? If so, what kind? No, I really don't, because it's distracting. It's too distracting to me. So during sex, I would rather not. I'd rather concentrate on what's happening. So there's that. What is the number one sexiest song that will always get you horny almost any time? Huh. I can't say that I have one. As weird as that sounds, horny is different than exhilarated. You know? Like feeling sexy and turned on with all the physical things that go along with that. It doesn't happen because I listen to a song. Not usually. I'll have the butterflies in my stomach. I'll get the chills in the back of my neck. I'll get excited and exhilarated by listening to a song, but not really horny. So I don't know. And that's why I love conflating music and sexuality so much, is that music will do that to me, will make me exhilarated and make me excited and give me chills and give me butterflies and give me all those weird, like crazy feelings. And sex adds on top of that the, you know, physical, like I'm turned on component and I'm going to come component. You mix those two together and you get like the best of both worlds and like the ultimate experience. And I would say that I've created experiences for myself that do that for me, you know, by combining those two elements, music and sex. So music of itself doesn't get me horny. It gets me excited. It gets me, you know, exhilarated, but sex gets me horny, and pictures of beautiful women get me horny, and stories about sex get me horny, and you put those things together with music, and it just becomes a larger thing that sort of is bigger than the parts put together. So, there. How did you find GWA? I think I already answered that one, which my spouse sort of prompted me to look for places to share my stuff, and I ended up finding GWA after a little bit of searching. What made you decide to contribute to the community? Well, I wanted a place to share my stuff. You know, I wanted to find like-minded people who might actually like this and understand what I'm trying to do. And so that's why I wanted to contribute to the community. Once I found the community, I was ready to contribute. I already had like 10 things already made and done, finished, and I ended up releasing them all once a week for a couple months. Are there any recordings you keep coming back to for whatever reason? Recordings of mine or recordings of somebody else? Well, for recordings of mine, I really love my my Tracy series, the Good Girl series, the Just Like an Animal series, and the Easy series. Those things, again, because they conflate the climax and exhilaration of music with the horniness and all the sexual stuff of the stories themselves, when they come together like that. There's nothing quite like that. I've never experienced anything quite like that except for Night Trips 1 and Night Trips 2. I don't think anybody else is doing it like that. So I come back to those. So yeah, in a sense, I've turned myself on that way, right? As far as others' recordings, I come back to ones like performers who have filled my scripts. Yes. I definitely, you know, have ones that have just blown me away. But I don't want to say who they are because I love them all. They're just, man, I'm so grateful every time anybody does that. It's so amazing. I can't even tell you what it feels like to have a woman out there fill one of my scripts. Because I write those scripts to turn myself on, right? And when I get a script fill like that, it's one of the unique feelings in the world. I've never felt anything like it when a performer nails one of my scripts. I can't. So I go back to those. Oh yeah, I go back to those. There's also others that I go back to. But again, I feel weird about calling specific people out because I don't want to make other people feel bad. So I think that's all I'll say. When you open GWA and hit new, what would you love to see? Well, I always love to see stuff that I would write. The problem is that I'm not sure that I would recognize what I would love in the tags, because the tags only go so far, you know? Tags can only tell you so much about an audio. So the tags that I look for are like humiliation and degradation and dirty talk and name calling and anything that indicates a power imbalance, whether it's F sub or F dom. I tend to like F sub better because the F dom in general doesn't tend to be like I like it, which is sort of bratty princess type. It tends to be more like Dom in the dungeon type, right? Or Dom, you know, powerful a woman in authority type. And I tend to not like that as much. So if I were to look at new, those are the kinds of tags that I would look for. And I tend to look for F sub stuff. And yeah, to be honest, there's not a whole lot out there, but that's okay. There's not a whole lot out there for anybody. Everybody's got their own specific desires. So the beautiful part about GWA is that it caters to all those desires. And there's enough creators out there creating different kinds of stuff that my needs are going to be fulfilled, and everybody else's are too. It's just a matter of time or a matter of asking, you know. If you were queen of GWA for a day, any changes you would make to improve it? The only thing that I would rather it not do is GWA in the rules requires you to, disclose when you've used a voice changer to change your voice. I understand it, I think, but I kind of don't. Like, I understand, totally on board with my verification audio needing to be my voice. Get that. Absolutely awesome. But I wish I didn't have to just state every damn post of an audio I make on GWA that, yeah, this is, I've put a voice changer on my voice. Because what's important is, it's not who I am. It's what my voice sounds like. If you're not turned on by my voice, that's fine. There's all kinds of people who aren't turned on by all kinds of voices, and that's fine. If you conflate my voice with who I am, I wish we didn't have to do that. I wish I didn't have to disclose that every time. That's the only thing I would change. I'm sure there's a good reason for it. And I don't mind that I have to use my real voice for the verification. That's perfectly fine. And I've been very upfront about being trans on GWA. But there are still some people who just, I don't know, they're just mean about it. And it really bothers me. But there it is. For writing stuff. So what usually inspires work on a new piece? Okay, here we go. So anything, everything? I think I've said in questionnaires I've answered before, and you can go look back on GWA Backstage to see what questionnaires I've answered. I've answered like two of them. I have no shortage of ideas when it comes to erotic scripts. Like, I have an endless fountain of them. I have friends who do amazing work in safe for work, creative disciplines that just have endless ideas and can work so fast and can do things so well. And I'm in awe of my friends who can do that, you know. I work slower in a safe work space, right? Because I like to come up with good ideas that, you know, have meaning and have subtext and have emotion behind them. I like to take my time to do that, and it does take time to do that. With not safe for work stuff, with erotic audio stuff that I create for GWA, I can come up with those ideas like that. I mean, it's one after the other. Most of the time, I can come up with something right away, you know. Now, executing it is where it matters. Ideas are cheap. Ideas are easy. Anybody can come up with ideas, right? Sometimes you're a little slower, and that's okay. And sometimes, you know, it takes longer. But ideas are easy. It's the execution of those ideas that matter. So when you ask, you know, what usually inspires work on a new piece, anything and everything. Like one, for example, I did a script called I Want to Be Useful for My Daddy. I love that script and I love the feel of it. And I wrote it specifically for Pretty Please Kill Me Now. And she did so great with it. And I love that. And that script was inspired by a picture that somebody put on a Discord server of body writing, of you know, a pretty girl who had really nasty body writing written on her, you know, and that's a weakness of mine. I love that. Again, degradation, humiliation kind of stuff, that F sub kind of vibe. And I saw this picture and I'm like, oh man. And it just speaks to me. It turns me on. It's just so like vulnerable, this girl who's willing to let her body be written on like that. And how sexy that is to me, you know? And so I'm like, man, I want to write a script about that. And so that is what inspired I Want to Be Useful for My Daddy. And I wrote it partly also because I had started corresponding with Pretty Please Kill Me Now. And I'm like, oh, I want to write something for you if you will let me, you know, if you don't mind, I would really like to. And she said, sure, you know, whatever, you know, write something. And so I did. I wrote that and I wrote another one that is still secret. That's still out there. And I'm sort of hoping that she will someday fill it, but it's hers. I mean, I'm waiting for her to do it. I'm not going to release it publicly until she does. So this is one of them. So this I Want to Be Useful for My Daddy was inspired by a picture of a girl who had body writing on her, you know. Anything and everything. Like, I like I don't like formalized sex, meaning I don't like a dungeon. I don't like BDSM so much. It's fine. Like, I can write it to a certain extent, but I tend to like it when it's more dangerous than that, when it's more spontaneous than that, and it uses more like workaday objects to make things happen. Like, not necessarily like, you know, the silk rope or the trappings of a BDSM dungeon that is designed to do this, right? But more like a found object saying, okay, I want you to fuck a bottle, you know. That's something that you can find like in the trash and say, okay, fuck this bottle. You know, I mean, that, I know that's, this is again, super not safe for work and goes into my dark mind, but that's where I go. And so an example of that is my third part of hypnotized college student about the character Samantha. She, you know, I'm like, I've had this idea of a girl being sort of coerced into fucking the gear shifter on a sports car for years and years and years and years. And I'm sure I'm not the only one to have that idea. I'm sure it's executed other places. But this was my first opportunity to really do it, to really write something and execute it in a way that I'm going to release it, that I'm going to do it. And again, it's sort of found object. It's spontaneous, you know, control, power imbalance, degradation, humiliation, and yet body betrayal too. Like, Samantha gets turned on by having to do this, you know. That's kind of where I'm coming from. And so what usually inspires work on a new piece? You name it, you know. I'll just have ideas come to me in the shower or in bed or on the in the car, you know, driving to wherever I'm going. And the other thing about it, though, is that I'm confident that those ideas will come back or that I'll have new ones. So I don't necessarily feel so precious about a single idea that I need to write it down right away. Like, if I wake up in the middle of the night of a dream and have a notebook next to my bed and write that idea down because I'm going to lose it, I don't really worry about that because I know and I have confidence that I'm going to have other ideas that are just as good. And there's a sort of wellspring fountain of them that's in the back of my head somewhere that I know that they will come, whether I get them from watching a safer work but risque movie, or I get them, or, you know, like Game of Thrones. I have ideas. I have awful, mean, terrible ideas based on my watching the HBO series Game of Thrones. You know, just that. I've got 15 different ideas that I could bring to life, you know, and one day maybe I will. But those are the things that's like the reservoir is always there. It's the ones that I want to bring out and execute that are that matter, you know, because execution matters. The ideas are easy. Coming up with the ideas is easy. It's putting them in a context and within a script, within the boundaries of writing for GWA or writing for whatever medium you happen to be writing for, whether it's going to be literotica or whatever. Deciding what medium you're going to put it in, writing to that medium and saying, okay, I want to execute this idea in the best way possible. I want this to be the definitive execution of this idea for me, right? That's how I work, which is why I kind of tend to not do sequels either. I'll tend to say, okay, this is the idea. I'm not saving anything for future. I'm putting it all in this idea, in this execution right now. And I'm going to make the definitive, like, girl having sex with a gear shifter in a sports car script. And I'm putting everything that I would want from that idea into this this particular execution of it, this one script. This is the definitive version of my idea of what that should be, right? So sequels tend to be like, well, I've already did it in the first one. You know, why would I do that again? I'd rather just start over and take another idea from the reservoir and execute that instead. I do sequels on occasion, but not usually. And that's why, because I tend to just pour it all in the first time, you know. So anyway, I'm really off the track and I'm going off, but this is what I really love to talk about. So next question. Do you usually spend a lot of time editing and refining your work, or is it more of an improvisational experience? The first time I write it is improvisational. So the first draft is stream of consciousness. Just get it out there and make it happen, right? That's the best way that I have found to do it, is to say, here's my idea. I'm just going to write. I'm going to write, and it's going to be terrible, and I'm going to get all the ideas out there, and I'm going to get it finished. A lot of people will stop there and say, that's it. I'm going to record this. I'm going to send it out, and have for other people to record it. I'm going to be done. And that's good enough. For me, it's not good enough. Not even close. So I will write that first draft and I'll feel like, okay, this is the hard part. The hard part's done now. I've got the first draft done. I've got the beginning, the middle, and the end, and it's all sort of roughed in. Now I, put it away for a day or two and I come back and I say, okay, now the fun part begins, which is to edit that stuff and to add in that editing phase is where I add in all that ambiguity and intrigue and the emotional beats that I want and the eye-opening wow moments that happen. That only happens in the editing phase. It doesn't generally happen in the rough draft phase. The rough draft phase is like, I want to have a moment here like this. I want to execute this so that the moment happens here and like something like that. You know, that's literally what I'll say. It's like, I kind of want this to be like a revelation of this that is foreshadowed earlier, but blah, blah, blah. It's going to happen when I actually write it. And then I'll move on, right? And then the editing phase is when I start to realize what those little things are, what the little foreshadowing is, and how to execute that moment so that it is as best as I can make it. And I'll usually go through 2 or 3 rounds of that, total. And about round 2, I will actually record the audio myself. So I'll actually do it, whether I'm going to release a performance of the script that I just wrote or not is immaterial. I still perform it because the act of performing it makes me realize what's wrong with it. Like, okay, I'm delaying too long on this, and there's too much blowjob here, and there's not enough of a explanation or there's it goes too quick from this beat to this beat, and I need a little bit of a transition here or whatever. Those are the things that I'll realize only when I try to perform it, And so once I do that, I'll perform it and go, okay, well, there's problems, so I'm going to actually work on it a little bit more. And then I'll perform it again. And then once I've got like that mostly done, 90%, then I'll actually make little changes based on the performance that I did. And then I'll feel like it's good enough to. Now, this whole process takes, it can take a few days. It can take a week. It can take 2 weeks. In extreme cases, it can take a month or 2 months, but usually average time between when I start a script and when I finish one to the point where I'm going to send it out, it's usually about a week and a half-ish, of me working on it maybe an hour a day or something like that. That's about right. An hour a day and then not doing some days because I have to do other stuff. So, that's how long it usually takes for me. Everybody's different, Next question. Any pieces you started but just couldn't get them in a place where you were happy with? If so, what were they about? What prevented them from being good enough? Wow. I'm sorry this is going on so long, but this is I can answer this question like with many answers. The short answer is, oh, yes, of course there are pieces I've started but couldn't get them in the place where I was happy with. Of course. There are many pieces like that. I have a hard drive full of ideas that have never seen the light of day. They're out there. Some of them are too dark. Some of them are not dark enough or not interesting enough. Not dark enough. That's not true. I don't necessarily go all dark, right? But they're not interesting enough. They're not tension-filled enough to go out there. And for whatever reason, I've decided that the idea is the flaw and not the execution of the idea. So one day I may come back to those pieces and I'll certainly mine them for ideas, you know, but I do have so many. One, for example, I was working on the Sweet Sticky Cum audio or, you know, script. It's one of the Tracy ones, one of the ones that from the, I believe it's Just Like an Animal series, Sweet Sticky Cum. And my whole thing was like, I definitely am a cum fetishist, and I like that sort of humiliation and degradation of marking with cum and cum play and doing that kind of stuff. And I was trying to come up with, like I said before, like the definitive, how would I do cum play script, you know, because it's one of my big ones. It's one of the big kinks that I have. So I'm like, okay, how do I do this? And so I started messing with it for a long time, and it took me months and months, actually, like literally like 6 months to write what would eventually become Sweet Sticky Cum. And I went through several failed attempts. And part of that is because at a certain point for me, cum play becomes too much, you know? So it becomes... It moves away from what the intent of it is to me, what the sort of sexy part is, which is the marking, degradation, cum play, like, you know, using a girl and depositing, you know, your seed onto her kind of thing. And it moves away from that into just a big mess, you know, where it just becomes utilitarian, cleanup. You know, and or you know, making as big a mess as possible, and that I lose it then. It loses its magic at that point. And so doing it right and doing it carefully was really important to me. So I ended up, one of the ideas that I had and scrapped for that one was that April, the character in those audios who talks, right, and sort of the inspiration of my username, is coaxing Tracy into going to this sock hop, like a 50s style dance, right? Complete with the sock hop dress, like, you know, the big poofy dress that 50s style, with, you know, Mary Jane shoes and little white frilly socks and stuff like that. She's going to go to the sock hop, but the thing is, she's going to be the only girl there. And so it ends up being, you know, the idea is that it turns into sort of a gangbang bukkake thing. But it turns out that when you get more than a certain number of guys coming on a girl, it just becomes that utilitarian slop fest where I lose complete interest in it. It's like not sexy anymore, and it's not a satisfying ending, right? And it took me a while to figure that out. To like, oh, okay, so that's not what I'm into exactly. What I really am into is, you know, this. And so I scrapped it. It's gone. It's there on my hard drive. I still have it. I still have the idea and what I started with. And then when it started to go completely off the rails, when I realized, oh my gosh, I have like a dozen or two dozen guys here who want to come on Tracy, it just got like, oh no, this isn't what I want at all. So I just scrapped it and I started over. And what I eventually came out with was five guys, and not all of them coming on her face, but you know, filling her up, like filling her up with cum. And that was, turns out, what really turned me on. And so that's what I did. And it's one of my favorite audios that I've made, Sweet Sticky Cum, because the music that goes along with it is just awesome and perfect. And, you know, it does exactly what I wanted it to do. Like, there's little cues and motifs that recur when Tracy gets cum, you know, pumped into her or on her and stuff like that. And it is for me the definitive, like, this is my cum fetish audio. This is it. Now, there's other topics about that I could explore. And I know, again, the Reservoir of Ideas has a bunch of those in it. But that one took a long, long time to figure out, and a couple of different, like, failed attempts that are still on the hard drive. But this is what I came up with. And another one that I couldn't get into a place I was happy with is I got really far on this, and it was going to be something I was going to put up on Literotica, but a true BDSM story, right? Turns out I'm not really into BDSM, not in the traditional way. So while what I've written so far is really good, I think, and it really hits on some things that I love and I have not hit on in other video or other scripts or stories that I have actually released, it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel good. It was not good enough. So even though I've written, I don't know, 30,000 words, and most of it's very good, it's not finished. And because it's not finished, and because I don't know how to finish it, it will remain on the hard drive and it will remain unreleased. But there are ideas in there that I will mine and take for different other things. I don't think I'll ever finish that one, but there are ideas that I will take and use, you know. So nothing is wasted, you know, even though it's not out there for other people to consume. It's not wasted effort. Nothing like that is. And I've been doing this for 35 years. So I'm used to it. You know, I'm not worried that I'm going to run out of ideas. They're just not that precious to me. I've got a million of them. So, and I think that's the most healthy way to look at it. Okay, finally, on to another question. Hypnosis is the theme of these questions from Mr. Brumley. Have you ever been hypnotized? If so, what was it like? I have been hypnotized. I was hypnotized when I was a little kid. I had eye trouble when I was a kid. I would go cross-eyed for some reason. Like, my eyes just wanted to go inward. And so I ended up going through eye training to try to help that. Like, I couldn't even catch a ball when I was a little kid. And I forget what it was called, but it was, you know, some way of training my eyes to separate out to the sides of my head rather than go inward toward my nose. And it actually did help. Now, part of that might have been that I just got older and things got better and I just got used to it. But I did go through that for a little while. And part of that was being hypnotized. Like, it was sort of this autogenic guided imagery kind of thing. And this woman, she made this tape for me, a cassette tape that I would listen to. And it was basically just hypnotism. And that, I think, had a big impact on me. I was really immersed, you know. It's like, you're on a boat and you're on a schooner and the white, you know, spray of the ocean, you know, cascades over your eyes and you relax them and blah, blah, blah. And that was the whole thing, right? But to me, it wasn't about my eyes. It was about the imagery, you know. And so it was really immersive to me. And so I think that was a very big influence. Now, I've been hypnotized since then, but not by anybody in person. So I've certainly consumed my fair share of erotic hypnotism, you know. And one of my favorite performers there is Ember. And I forget her website name, but she's really expensive. But I did get She also puts out a bunch of free stuff, you know, and I've done some custom stuff from her, which is amazing. But yes, I've been hypnotized in terms of doing erotic hypnosis in the comfort of my own home alone, you know, in a dark room, that kind of thing. And what was it like? It was immersive. It's really amazing. You know, it's something. Have you ever hypnotized someone else? If so, what happened? I have not. Not in a traditional sense, right? I do not consider what I do with my Tracy audios as hypnotism, but I believe that it is immersive enough to become hypnotized by them, right? I wrote them specifically to immerse you, to make you sort of forget what's happening and to sort of throw you into a world that is of words and imagery that that is like hypnotism, right? I don't claim to be a hypnotist. I'm not a hypnotist. I don't know the techniques. I don't know everything there is to know about it by any stretch. But the Good Girl, Just Like an Animal, and Easy series are meant to sort of create a state in which you, a state of immersion. That's what they're written to do. And for me, when I listen to them, they do it, you know? And in terms of the next question, what does hypnotism mean to you? To me, it can mean lots of things. It can mean a pointed, like, intentional way of submersing you into your subconscious, like a traditional hypnotist does, but can also be an immersive experience where you close your eyes and let the imagery around you sort of immerse you into an almost subconscious state, right? And I think, at least for me, some of the audios with music that I have created do that for me. Some of the audios that I've created without music do that for me. And some of the audios that I have listened to without music do that for me. It's an immersion. It's something that goes beyond just a story. It's using words and using, you know, tone of voice and delivery to sort of bring you under into a place and then sort of let you come out of that after the story is over. And so in terms of the final question, why is it a frequent element of your work? Because I like that immersion. I like to sort of bring people into that state, you know. I also find it fascinating to explore mind control in that sense. Like, it's not realistic, but I like the idea that somebody is controlling somebody else's mind without them really knowing it. And the implications of that when you know, the shit hits the fan, when Samantha, for example, in my Hypnotized College Student series, wakes up and realizes, oh my God, I'm in a strip club. What am I doing here? And I've got this stuff on my face and I've been hypnotized to not realize what the stuff on my face is, or to even realize how I got here, or to really question it, you know? And the idea that the listener knows what's happening and that her sort of the person she's with knows what's happening, but that she doesn't, is delicious to me. So in terms of why I like hypnotism and why it's sort of a staple of my work, I like mind control. And so hypnotism, I sort of, you know, have used as one of the aspects of one of the ways of executing mind control. So I don't know, there it is. Anyway, if you've made it this far, I really, really appreciate that you've listened to all of my ramblings, and I thank you all for the awesome questions, even if they were kind of crazy. And I really enjoyed doing this, and I hope that you got something out of it or enjoyed it too. I really do appreciate it. I love talking about this stuff, and my PMs are open for anybody who wants to talk about this stuff, and my audios or other people's audios or you know, sexuality in terms of you know, dark themes and all that other stuff, the stuff that I love. I really love talking about it. And so you can find me there. You can find me on the Gone Wild Audible Discord server. I'm also there. And there it is. So thank you again for listening. Thank you for the questions. I will leave you so that you can go about your day and do something useful. And I'll talk to you later. Bye.